Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of August 2017. There's one more month left of summer. What a bummer. But guys, I gotta let you know, you're wonderful. You're a masterpiece. You're beautifully made. Important to people because you're important to me. You're highly favored by your creator, whether that is a god or, you know, the laws of physics and averages kind of working in tandem. You, my friends, are thirsty for knowledge and addicted to wonder. You, my friend, are an oddball. And here on this show, you are family to me, and we are one. This is episode 43 of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. I got no sponsor to hold me down or up or help. Just let you guys know, if you're interested in sponsoring this show and getting yourself your own spot, please check me out at www.lifeafterdeathsociety.com or send me a tweet at oddtonewfoundland, O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D, at oddtonewfoundland.com. Check it out. I'll be there. You can also get in touch with me on Instagram, which just look up for Odd the Newfoundland, as well as the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. You can always like me there and send me a message if you're interested in becoming a sponsor or, you know, looking for a shout-out. That's all good, too. I always want to give people, you know, their props, especially if you're an author of a paranormal book or anything like that. And, yeah, should come as no surprise at all that this month, of course, I did get a little bit of something in the mailbag. Yeah, that's right. I actually got a message from a Judy LeMay. She just simply wrote, back on July 1st when I released the last episode, which was Canadian Odyssey. I'll talk a little bit more about that episode now in a second, but she just simply wrote in a Facebook message, Judy LeMay said, I shared your group to my group, Haunted Paranormal Canada. And I wrote back, thanks so much, Judy. Listen, August 1st for a shout-out for you and your group, which would be me. So guys, check them all out on Facebook. That's Haunted Paranormal Canada. I'll be sure to share this show on that Facebook page. Give them a like, drop them a like. And of course, don't you guys forget, if you got a question or a comment or anything like that, you can always drop it to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. I'm always open. I love it. I love hearing from you guys, even if you got good or positive feedback. Another great thing you guys can do, too, of course, is subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening to it from. You know, put me in your playlist. This show only comes out once a month, so, you know, it's pretty easy to forget about me. And I know I'm kind of shooting myself in the foot sometimes by only having a monthly podcast, but what can I say? I take great pride in being, you know, something for you to look forward to once a month. I mean, if I was every week, I'd get kind of boring, wouldn't you think? Isn't life all about doing what everybody else isn't? Isn't that true? Guys, how has this month found you? I really hope that, you know, really, June and July were great months for you. I know a lot of people out there have just been giving me a lot of great feedback about the last episode, which came out on July 1st. Of course, it was Canada's 150th birthday. Canadian Odyssey was a road trip right across Canada talking about folklore and some of the weird stuff. It was a strange episode. It was different. It was odd, that's for sure. It didn't follow the same format as pretty much every other show I've ever done. So to me, it was definitely a challenge. A lot of research and stuff went into that episode. So you know what? If you want to hear me yammer on for a long period of time, You're going to love that show. But tonight, we're returning back to our basic format. That's right. We're bringing back the paranormal news. We're bringing back the oddities. We're bringing back the MUFON Minute with Laura Gilbert, of course. And tonight, we have a very, very special guest. Yeah. As seen on Destination America's A Haunting, I have Cindy Sauer, not Sawyer, Cindy Sauer. Okay, and she had her own episode of A Haunting based on her experience with a demonic possession. I think you guys are just going to, well, I think you're going to be genuinely creeped out. It was a really, really, really crazy story, and you know, what can I say? It's still afflicting her to this day. That's a little later in the show. All I know is that this show is going to be very different from the last one. It's going to be very, very dark, and you know, last show, there was no paranormal news. I've got a lot of paranormal news to cover. So let's go ahead and dig right in. Well, you want to go dark? How about Dark Ring? I just think of that movie, The Ring. The little girl crawling out of the well. Well, this has nothing to do with it, but this actually has to do with UFOs. A mystery surrounding black smoke vortexes and UFOs, to be exact. A peculiar aerial phenomenon has been sighted in countries all across the world in recent years. Dubbed smoke vortexes, these anomalous black rings have been sighted by hundreds of people everywhere from the remote wilderness of Siberia to the side of England's busy M62 motorway. In the case of the latter, which was reported just a few days ago, the mysterious phenomenon was spotted by so many that it ended up being covered by international news agencies. One witness, Kimberly Robinson, described it as the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Me and my boyfriend were driving today and noticed a black flying ring in the sky, she said. It looked a bit smoky, but the shape was a solid ring. We hadn't ever seen anything like this before, so we have looked into it and no one knows what it is. A similar sighting was also reported in Missouri a few days earlier, and there have been also sightings over Kazakhstan, Leamington Spa, and Florida over the past 4 years. So what exactly are these peculiar black rings? Far from being evidence of extraterrestrial visitors, it seems that this particular phenomenon may actually have more to do with down-to-earth explanations. A so-called smoke vortex can arise when you have a blast through a circular structure like a smokestack, said former MOD UFO investigator Nick Pope. So these weird effects can be caused by accident or indeed by design. On this latter point, they can be created as a sort of pyrotechnic effect that it would be interesting to know if there were any outdoor festivals being held in the area concerned. All I know is that if I woke up and looked outside my door and I seen one of these big black rings in the sky, I'd be pretty freaked out and I'd be thinking it's a UFO too. Like, you should check this out. It's all over YouTube. It's all over the world. Like, it's news, man. Check it out. Mystery smoke vortexes. Oh, man. Some stories just will not go away. And, you know, the Shroud of Turin is one that has always piqued the imagination of people. Could this truly be the burial cloth of Christ? You know, many, many people do believe that. Well, what if we told you we might be one step closer to figuring out the truth, because traces of blood have been found on the Shroud of Turin. A new analysis of the world-famous relic has allegedly revealed traces of blood from a torture victim. The mysterious Turin Shroud, which is believed by many to be the actual burial cloth of Jesus himself, has long been the subject of intense scrutiny, controversy, and debate. Now, following a thorough forensic examination of the cloth, researchers in Italy claim to have discovered traces of human blood within its fibers. Not only that, but a scientific analysis of these blood particles has suggested that the individual in question had likely been subjected to a prolonged period of physical torture before they died. Hence, the presence of these biological nanoparticles found during our experiments point to a violent death for a man wrapped in the Turin Shroud, said University of Padua professor Giulio Fanti. The discovery has reignited debate over the true origins and authenticity of the Shroud, which for years has divided scientists and theologians alike. Some believe the relic to be a medieval forgery, while others are convinced that it is genuine and dates back 2,000 years. But could the presence of blood on the Shroud really point to it actually being the burial cloth of Jesus Christ? Given that the Shroud has been moved around a lot over the centuries, even if there really is someone's blood on it, there is no guarantee that it has actually been there all along. For all we know, the blood is from a monk or priest who handled the Shroud relatively recently. So there you go. A little bit of a light shine on that. You know, just on the subject of the Shroud of Turin, look, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ and you truly believe in Jesus Christ, you don't need no shroud. I hate to quote the Bible, but I'm just going to go ahead and quote the Bible, okay? Here it comes. When they went looking for Jesus on the third day after he died, they went to go to his tomb. And somebody there said what? Why are you looking in a dead place for he who has risen, who is alive? Why are you looking at the Shroud of Turin, man? You want to see Jesus? Look at him working in people's life. Next subject. Let's move on. Okay, so I'd probably be saying Jesus for a whole different reason if this happened to me. This is just freaking me out. A woman realizes someone is living in her attic. Oh, there's stuff of horror movies right here. One 20-year-old woman found, to her horror, that she was not alone in her new apartment. When Amber Dawn first moved into her new home, everything seemed perfect. Yet as the days and weeks rolled by, she became aware that there was something not quite right about it. Her first clue, which came as she lay in bed on the first night after moving in, was the sound of footsteps coming from somewhere above. Thinking little of it, she nodded off to sleep. Over the next few months, however, a series of increasingly peculiar incidents started to plague her. Items of food seemed to go missing from kitchen cupboards. Eh, that's really, really strange. Like, yeah, it's pretty creepy. Okay, items of food would seem to go missing from the cupboards. Something she attributed to her brother letting himself in the house and taking things. Amber worked 3 jobs and was not as home much as she probably would be, so there was plenty of opportunity for him to do so. One night she received a call at work telling her that her apartment had flooded. It had flooded. When she arrived home, she found that her puppy, which she feared may have drowned, was in the sink. In the sink? Really? Someone had seemingly placed the dog there. It couldn't have gotten the sink on its own. Things would come to a head a few weeks later when, sitting in the bath, she looked up at the ceiling and realized that the attic hatch, which is normally closed, was wide open. It was at this moment that she realized someone had been living in the attic the entire creepy time. Oh man, that's creepy. Throwing on a bathrobe, she made a quick exit for the house and called the police. I would say, get the heck out of there. Okay, the whole time, throwing on a bathrobe, she made a quick exit from the house and called the police. When officers searched the property, they found food, drinks, cans, and a sleeping bag in the attic. The uninvited guest, however, had vanished, and to this day, his identity remains a total mystery. Creepy. Just freaking creepy. Moving on to something bigger, you know? I mean, I like to think that having, like, a person upstairs in your house is pretty simple to know someone's there. If anybody had an apartment, they'd know someone was up, like, above them. Trust me on that. But just because something is big and out there doesn't mean it's ever been found. And this next story, well, you know how much I love animals. I just got to talk about all God's crazy creatures. But here it comes. There was a new species of giant sunfish discovered. Now, if you know anything at all, like, I love fish. You guys should know that. I have 2 tropical tanks. If you're on my Instagram, you'll see me putting up pictures of them every now and then. So this is just a shocker. Marine researcher Marion Negard has identified the first new species of sunfish in over 130 years. Despite measuring 9 feet in length and weighing in at over 2 tons, this massive fish, which is the native to the Pacific Ocean, had somehow managed to completely elude detection. Its eventual discovery only came after Murdoch University researcher Marion Negard started analyzing DNA samples of sunfish for her PhD dissertation back in 2013. Despite there being only 3 known species at the time, her findings seem to suggest that there might be a 4th. Dubbing the mystery species Molotecta, or the hoodwinked sunfish, she spent the next few years traveling thousands of miles in an effort to collect samples and catalog specimens. Finding these fish and storing specimens for studies is a logistical nightmare due to their elusive nature and enormous size, so sunfish research is difficult at the best of times, she wrote. Early on, when I asked if I would be bringing my own crane to receive a specimen, I knew I was in for a challenge, but awesome adventure it was. So there you go. Go check it out. Giant sunfish. Can you imagine? Like, okay, like my biggest fish I have is a moonlight gourami. And he's like the size of my left hand. He's a pretty big fish, like for tropical fish. But like this thing is absolutely massive. It weighs over 2 tons. Like that's crazy. But it also lends to the idea that, man, there really are still sea monsters out there. It just blows me away how people write off, you know, like, well, I can't say Kraken because we kind of discovered one giant squid, but like people have talked about sea monsters for so many years. I mean, obviously you could have one of these things swimming. If I seen that thing swimming in the ocean, I'm sure you agree with me. You would think it's a monster. It's 2 tons, gigantic looking fish. And also if you were to look at a picture of this thing, it looks weird. It doesn't look like a big old fish. It looks like a grotesque, weird-looking animal. So there you go. I bet the firm on that. In fact, I might even bet an entire shipful of Nazi gold on it. A chest thought to be filled with Nazi gold has been found in the wreckage of the scuttled SS Minden. The ship, which has been located at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean near Iceland, was thought to be hauling over $130 million worth of gold from South America to Nazi-occupied Europe. After being loaded by officials from Branco Germanico, it left Brazil on September 6, 1939, before being spotted by two British cruisers, the HMS Calypso and the HMS Dunedin, out at sea. To prevent its valuables from being captured by the Allies, the crew deliberately scuttled the ship, which means sank it, and left it to sink to the bottom of the ocean. British treasure hunters are now attempting to acquire permission from authorities in Iceland to cut a hole in the ship's hull so that the chest can be recovered and taken back to the UK. It is believed that it could contain as much as 4 tons of the precious metal. Whether the vessel really does contain such a large haul of gold, however, as well as whether the researchers will be granted permission to retrieve it, remains, for the moment, at least unclear. So there you have it. Just because you think there be treasure doesn't mean you're allowed to go there. Still very interesting nonetheless. You know, Hitler was a weird, weird guy. We all know he was a madman, but he was very strange. He was deeply into the occult, and he was into, like, strange artifacts. Like, he was all about looking for the Holy Grail, and I believe he looked for the Lance as well, the Holy Lance. So, like, there's all kinds of stories about him out there, and just the weirdness. So it would not surprise me one bit if he had a ship loaded with gold, let me tell you. Okay. You know, I've heard about chupacabras before, but I've never actually heard, well, really a whole lot about them over the last year. It's been pretty quiet. But you know what? California, apparently, and their residents have been reporting chupacabra more in recent months. Alleged sightings of the cryptozoological creature have sparked concerns over the safety of local pets. Carrie Shucker, a resident of Riverside, Southern California, had been outside near his home when he encountered a strange creature that he described as 2 feet longer than the longest coyote you've ever seen, with a tail similar to that of a rat. After being shooed away, the mystery denizen reported turned and around and snarled. "It was cussing me out, basically," said Shucker. I stole its breakfast. It was hunting a cat. So far, 3 people in the same area have reported sightings of the creature. However, cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, who has been investigating reports of mysterious creatures for years, believes that it is far more likely to have been a coyote with mange than a legendary chupacabra. "DNA results prove that they are 100% canid, usually with mange," he said. "People label dog-like cryptic beast chupacabras because they love mysteries, and it's the hip thing to do." A local news report features an interview with Shucker, and I'm going to play that for you guys right now.
"The cat always likes to sneak out, but the cat is trained so it'll come to my voice, you know. And I was concerned because foggy mornings means coyotes come out and they try to hunt, you know, and catch something that way. So I went out on the back porch and I said, 'Come on, Jesse,' like that. And he jumped up on the porch and ran in the door just like that. And all of a sudden I looked and I saw something out where we have a garden. I had recently cleared it down to dirt because of the weeds and the fire danger. And this thing was standing out there looking at me. And I looked at it, and it was the ugliest looking thing. It had like a big rat tail, like a possum. And it had no fur on it. And it was kind of buckskin pink color. Buckskin and a little pinkish color. Kind of like a rat, or like a baby rat or something, or a mouse. You know, that kind of pink, only not that bright. And but it had a little pink in it. And it had kind of ripply looking skin, and it was probably at least 2 feet or more longer than the biggest coyote you've ever seen. And it was very lengthy. And it had more of a, like the picture that Tom drew, kind of a snout, sort of like a pig. And I could see that I don't see really good like I used to because I'm 70, you know, over 70. And so, and the fog was dimming my vision a little bit. But it had looked like it had teeth sticking like this out of its mouth. And so it turned its head like this and looked at me. It bothered me because it was looking at me so weird. And I said, I just yelled in a big deep voice and I said, 'Get out of here,' like that. And it goes, it turned and looked at me again and it just goes, like this. And I thought, what the heck? And when it did that, right from here, I got cold chills.
It challenged you.
Yeah, it went right up my neck like this. And I thought, whoa. And then the thing just walked very slowly over about 20 feet towards the hillside. And it turned around and looked at me again like this, you know, stared at me, and I yelled at it again, thinking it would take off. It didn't take off. It did the same thing again. It was cussing me out, basically, because I didn't realize until the second time it did it that I stole its breakfast. It was hunting my cat.
So there you go. The legendary Chupacabra, ladies and gentlemen. Very, very strange. Very, very strange indeed. Okay, so for my last story here of the paranormal news, I'm going to test out my singing lungs. Okay, are you ready? Here it comes. Somewhere over... Hey, come on, man. I'm just trying my best here. All right. I'll stop. Fine then. At least you can do is clap for me. At least I tried to sing. I guess I'll just go on with the story. Guys, did you see this amazing rainbow? A very rare full circle rainbow was filmed over Russia. A crane operator working on a construction site has recorded footage of a 360-degree rainbow. Filmed at the site of the Lac de Centre skyscraper in St. Petersburg, the video shows the rainbow stretching all the way around to form a complete circle of vibrant color high above the city. The recording, which was uploaded onto YouTube this week, has since gone viral. The building itself, which is due for completion in 2018, is set to be a whopping 1,516 feet tall, and it is absolutely amazing. It looks like, well, a giant rainbow surrounding a place. But like, it's a circle. You gotta check this out. Look up giant rainbow, full circle rainbow filmed over Russia. Okay, check that out. I think you guys will really, really like it. Alright guys, that's it for the paranormal news for the month of August 2017. And before I get to oddities, 10 strange facts about a very strange world, my good friend Laura is going to go a little dark on all of us. Yeah, that's right. She's going to bust out some of the creepiest, strangest UFO encounters. She's even going to break down the types of UFO encounters, which is so cool. Laura, take me away on a spaceship to a very, very dark place.
Thanks, John. I would like to welcome you to our MUFON Minute for August 2017. On J. Allen Hynek's scale of close encounters, we have the first kind, which are visual sightings of an unidentified flying object seemingly less than 500 feet away that show a, quote, appreciable angle extension and considerable detail. These are the only cases that I have investigated at this point. The second kind is classified as a UFO event in which physical effect is alleged. So these things can include changes in the functioning of a vehicle or electronic device like your phone, animals reacting strangely, a physiological effect such as paralysis or heat or discomfort in the witness, or some physical trace like impressions of the ground, scorched, a chemical trace, or radiation. The third kind are UFO encounters in which an animated creature is present. So these could be things like humanoids, robots, and humans who seem to be occupants or pilots of a UFO. Once we get into close encounters of the fourth kind, we're talking about things like a UFO event in which a human is abducted by a UFO or its occupants. This kind was actually not included in Hynek's first scale. Jacques Vallée argued in the Journal of Scientific Exploration that a CE4 should be described as cases when witnesses experience a transformation of their sense of reality, so as to also include non-abduction cases where hallucinatory or dreamlike events are associated with UFO encounters. As you can imagine, these encounters and experiences can range from beautiful, transformative events to terrifying, earth-shattering traumas. I know that these are experiences that I have never personally, to my knowledge, experienced, and are something that I'm trying to learn more about. I believe I have spoken briefly about the Betty and Barney Hill abduction, and I encourage those new to this area to check out their story. It took place in 1961, and the accounts, drawings, and examples of hypnosis make it fascinating to learn about. It is very easy to find some information online, as it is one of the best known abduction stories ever. I've gathered some other stories for this month's podcast and found an article by Jacob Gears, who summarized some of them nicely on the blog Thought Catalog. The Gundaya McKay alien abduction is a rarely known abduction report from Australia. In a chilling story involving three people, a 22-year-old named Amy was abducted right out of the window of her lounge room by some sort of flying craft back in 2001. Amy's husband Keith was already gone to bed, and her friend Petra stayed up to read in another room. Petra was abruptly disrupted by a blinding light coming from the lounge room and the sound of shattering glass. The rectangular beam of light was shining into the room, and, according to Petra, she saw Amy being pulled out the window by the light, still apparently asleep. Keith then woke up, and both he and Petra searched the house and surrounding area for Amy, who was nowhere to be seen. The police were eventually called. Amy eventually turned up over 700 kilometers away, with strange marks on her inner thigh and bizarrely extensive body hair growth. Our next tale is about Robert Taylor, a forestry worker in Scotland. He was heading to work in the woods with his dog in 1979 when he turned a corner and saw a UFO parked in a field, which he later described as a flying dome. Two small spheres came from the object. They made a sound as their spikes moved over the earth. They came to stop beside him, grabbed his pants, and began to drag him back to the UFO. The spiked objects were very similar to the UFO, only smaller. He could smell a strong, sickening odor, and then he lost consciousness. When he came to, the spears were gone, but his dog was still there. The dog was panicky, running around and barking. Taylor did try to calm him down, but found that his voice was gone. He was very weak, and when he tried to stand, he just couldn't. He crawled for a time until he was able to stand again. He finally made it back to his pickup truck and tried his radio to work his headquarters via his two-way, but he could still not speak. Attempting to drive his truck back, he got stuck in the mud, so he started a long walk of about a mile back to his house. His wife phoned the police once he got home, remarking that he looked terrible. The police began an investigation, having no true explanation for the bizarre tracks left at the scene of the UFO. Due to his injuries, the police recorded the matter as a common assault, and the incident is popularly promoted as the only example of an alien sighting becoming the subject of criminal investigation. No aircraft, civilian or military, was scheduled to be in the area, according to comprehensive flight logs. Another biggie is Travis Walton's abduction experience, which has been presented in the movie Fire in the Sky. Travis Walton was one of seven men working in a forestry team in Snowflake, Arizona, in November 1975. When heading home from work one night, the team spied a blindingly bright light. Thinking it was a crashed plane, they drove over to check on the craft. What they saw, however, did not look like any plane. Walton jumped out of the truck to get a closer look at the craft. Then suddenly, a bright light shone and shot out from the aircraft and sent Walton floating into the UFO. The remaining six crew members panicked and drove away from the scene to get help. About 7:30, one of the crew members called the police. Deputy Sheriff Chuck Ellison answered the telephone. The crew member initially reported only that one of the logging crew was simply missing. Ellison met up with the crew at the shopping center. Then they related the tale to him. All the men distraught, two of them in tears. And though he was somewhat skeptical of the fantastic account, Ellison would later reflect that if they were acting, they were awfully good at it. After an initial scan of the area showed no evidence of a UFO, the police began to suspect that the men were using the story to cover up the fact that they simply murdered Walton. However, over the next few days, all six loggers were subjected to intense interrogations and polygraphs, and their story seemed to hold up. But that's when Walton suddenly reappeared. Thinking he had only been gone for a few hours, Walton retold parts of the story that he could remember. He said he was interrogated by three creatures with bald heads and huge eyes. He apparently encountered many different creatures on the craft who performed experiments on him, Many people were skeptical of the story, but Walton and all the other loggers maintained their stories. To this day, Walton is a regular at UFO conferences and symposia, all the while maintaining his story. If you have ever had an experience like this and would like to talk to someone experienced, report it to www.mufon.com. Abduction experiences are part of our training for MUFON field investigators, and there were some very knowledgeable, experienced, and compassionate field investigators who will be able to assist you. For more information about MUFON and Newfoundland and Labrador, be sure to check out the Newfoundland UFO Network on Facebook. Thanks, John.
Just how long have we been receiving these mysterious signals from outer space?
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddities.
All right, guys, it's time for oddities. That's right, 10 very strange facts, well, that are very, very true about our odd, odd world. And remember, they don't necessarily have to be paranormal. They're actually quite true. Yeah, they're proven. Did you know the toothbrush was invented in China in 1498? Did you know Mongolia is the largest landlocked country? Did you know Vatican City is the smallest country in the world with a population of 1,000 and just 108.7 acres? And that's probably grown a little bit since then. Did you know in Japan, watermelons are squared? It's easier to stack them that way. Also explains why Jell-O jigglers are squared. 98% of Japanese are cremated. Did you know that? Telling you. It's all about saving space. The number 4 is considered unlucky in Japan because it is pronounced the same as death. Did you know the average Japanese household watches more than 10 hours of television a day? Did you know the Philippines has about 7,100 islands, of which only 460 are more than 1 square mile in area? Did you know that yo-yos were used as weapons by warriors in the Philippines in the 16th century? Did you know that Australian soldiers used to sing the song "We're Off to See the Wizard" as a marching song in World War II? So there you go, guys. Things have come full circle. I sang that horrible rendition of Over the Rainbow, and now we're off to see the wizard. This has been a very Oz-heavy episode. Did you know Australians' $5 to $100 notes are made of plastic? Interesting. Did you know the Nullarbor Plain of Australia covers 100,000 square miles without a single tree? Did you know Tasmania, Australia, has the cleanest air in the inhabited world? Did you know Greenland is the largest island in the world? Move over, Newfoundland. Did you know The Simpsons is the longest-running animated series on TV? Did you know the first toilet ever seen in television was on Leave It to Beaver? Leave It to Number 2, Leave It to Beaver. Did you know in every episode of Seinfeld, there is a Superman somewhere? Guys, what can I say? These are all really odd, but they're all really true. I can see you busting out your Seinfeld there on your Netflix. You're looking at every single episode has Superman in it. That is true. Go check it out. Guys, I hope you really enjoyed your oddities for this month. They're really, really weird. I mean, why not listen to a podcast that makes you just a little bit more of a wise ass? Guys, I'll be right back with our guest, the afflicted, the possessed Cindy Sauer. Don't you dare go away.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. One of the greatest tricks the devil and his demons ever played on us all is convincing the world that they do not exist. and him as well. But tonight's guest would disagree wholeheartedly with that statement. She lived through a real live demonic possession case, which would serve as a cautionary tale to us all, as well as an uplifting story of survival. She's no stranger to the darkest of darks and lowest of lows, but she's still standing. So gripping was her terrifying encounters that on Destination America's Season 5, A Haunting, she got her own episode. Tonight on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, I bring you a spiritual warrior. Tonight I bring you the possession of Cindy Sauer. Cindy, how are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks so much for taking the time to be on tonight. We're going to have a great time, but unfortunately, we got to kind of go dark. We got to turn the lights off because... yeah, you've lived it, a real live demonic possession. And I know I'm going to ask a loaded question, and if it takes you 20 minutes, Cindy, to answer this question, that's okay. Tell me how all this began.
Well, it began in a really more intense fashion after we suffered a death in our family. My husband of 13 years committed suicide, and we had things happen before he had died. I've always experienced things from as long as I can remember. And on and off through my life, there are just certain things that almost led up to it. But after he died is when things got a little bit more intense. We started to experience things around the house, and it just progressed into something that was an absolute nightmare. It's something you never think is going to happen to you. Never in a million years do you wake up and think, okay, I'm going to get possessed. I'm going to have to deal with demonic. And the paranormal being something that I've always had an interest in, and I've always been intrigued by, even before, the TV shows, before Ghost Hunters or Ghost Adventures. We kind of did a little bit of investigating, some friends and a sibling. But I avoided the subject of demonology and the demonic, like the plague. I never went near it. I was terrified of it. And so for it to happen, it was unbelievable. It's something that you never see coming. And I never saw it coming, not ever. It still boggles my mind to sit back and think that it even happened. It's still to me very surreal, even though it did happen to me. And you try to come to grips with it, but it's such a something that it's not, it's a reality based concept for so many people, for everybody, honestly. You never see them, you never think they're real. A lot of people don't even believe in the paranormal altogether, but the demonic is something that's just, it's so far out there. But I'm trying to bring it into reality and put a face on this, because people do need help. And that's really my goal through this, is to kind of wake people up and let them understand that this does happen. And we have to be able to learn to accept it and learn more about it, because we're not going to be able to learn about it more until we accept the fact that it's real. But moving on to, why it happened, and that's sort of still up in the air with us, because we're not exactly sure what the catalyst was for this to happen. We know the events that took place around when it did happen, and my first attack and the things that were going on, but we still don't know the exact why. And so therein lies the big question, is why did I become possessed? And I'm not sure that there is one solid answer for that. I think that there's a recipe of things that can happen, and that once conditions are right, maybe, that this allows them to be able to do this. There's, I'm sure, weakness involved in this. And, I don't think that anyone is exempt. That's another thing that people feel like if they're a certain faith or if they have certain beliefs that they're completely exempt from it. They also think maybe if they were baptized that you're completely exempt from it, and you're not. I grew up in church. I was Methodist. I was baptized. And even the priest was very taken aback by the fact that I was baptized and said, if she was baptized, she cannot be possessed. And he even changed his way of thinking on that in a way because he saw it with his own eyes. I mean, the proof was there. So I hopefully can dispel some of the, I guess, lore and the preconceived ideas about what possession is and what happens. So that's another thing that, that I want to be able to kind of wake people up to.
Understood. Well, there's a lot to cover there, Cindy, and I must say it's a lot to kind of grasp all at once. And I will say this, you know, there must have been the very first encounter though with this demon, this entity. Was it a demon? Was this the devil himself? What exactly was this in your view?
In my view, the first attack was a demon. And when we experienced it, Jason is also on the episode with me. He's my fiance. We had gone to a house. It was huge. And there's some interesting information about this house. It's not out, but that I have about this house, that I'm not ready to sort of talk about yet. So as much as I'd like to, I'm not going to do it yet because I need to kind of do a little bit more digging on it. But the house that we went to was an abandoned house. And we went there to do, you know, some investigating. The house is amazing. It's just what you think a haunted house would look like. And people would recognize it probably if they saw it. But we went in initially to do sort of a sweep during the day and get a feel for what the house was like and the layout. And everything was okay. It just, I felt uneasy, but a place like that will make you feel uneasy. But I did see a shadow figure at the bottom of the basement stairs when we were kind of looking around. And, of course, we went down and didn't see anything. The attic made me uneasy. I didn't go all the way up. But we cased it during the day and then came back later that night. And to kind of condense it. We were going to go inside and never made it inside. I was extremely uneasy and agitated and just not, things around me weren't right. And we could see things sort of out of our peripheral vision. We were hearing things. It, like, everything was sort of just kind of moving, you know, everything was moving and vibrating and just kind of swirling around. And we never made it in the house. This thing that was there, it came after me. And, I tried to get in the car and it kind of got me before I got in the car. And the first attack happened at the bottom of the driveway. And then we moved on after I calmed down to a parking lot that was up the road. And that's when the major attack happened, which consisted of me sort of losing myself and making noises that weren't coming from me. They were coming from my body, but not from myself. And that's the moment that I knew that something really, really bad was wrong, was when Jason asked me what my name was. And instead of answering him, I hissed. And it was a really, really sick sort of very throaty, deep hiss that came out of me. And that's when I knew that something was really, really wrong. And I realized and understood at that point that it was a demon. A lot of people, you know, think that when you're going through an attack, which is what I call them, that you kind of black out and don't remember everything. But in my case, and I can't say that this is true for everyone, but in my case, I remembered very much of it, and I remembered it vividly, not just what I was seeing and what was happening to my body, but also what this thing was conveying, that what it felt. I suppose that the emotions, the energy that it put off, I was here. I could hear it. It would, you know, speak to me during the attacks, before the attacks. It would speak to me, and even, you know, in between, it would say things to me. But I was very aware of what was happening to me when the attacks would happen, and it was almost as if I was taking a back seat, like someone had gotten in my car and shoved me into the back seat, and I could not control the car. All I could do was sit back and just watch and wait and feel everything that this person that stole the car was feeling, but there was nothing I could do. And if, I couldn't even pray, not even in my head. I just had to wait it out, which is, it's a hell all on its own, that it's something that I don't ever think that I could describe to someone fully. It is that feeling of being completely out of control and not being alone in your own body. There's just no way to, you'd have to really experience it to understand it. And I hope that nobody has to do that, but that's what would happen during the attacks. And that was the first attack at the house that we were going to investigate.
Wow. And you know, that whole thought of your body not being in your own control is such a terrifying idea. And, you know, I, as a paranormal investigator myself, it's definitely a cautionary tale. Absolutely. And you mentioned that you were going to investigate this place. So you've been a paranormal investigator in the past, I take it.
Yes. I did on nothing major, big scale, you know, just amateur local kind of stuff. But yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I was, it's something I was always interested in. So yeah, I did investigate.
And Cindy, how many we'll say ghost hunts, we'll say, for lack of a better word here, or paranormal investigations, do you think you were on before this happened?
Oh gosh, I think that my friends and I, we probably, I don't know, 20 or 30 investigations maybe that we've gone on.
Because there's people out there right now who are probably on their 20th investigation, and they're convinced there's no such thing as demonic entities or anything negative that can attach to them. They're convinced of it. Me, myself, I'm very fortunate. Very, very fortunate. I've never had to deal with even a dark entity before. It's never really happened. But, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that it's out there, because there's good entities out there. If there's good, there's got to be bad. There's got to be an alpha to every omega. You know what I mean? There's got to be a yin to every
absolutely.
Yang.
So yes, absolutely.
When we hear about this story, this possession of you, you know, I'd like to think that at some point, if there's a demon and the devil involved, God has to step in here somehow. Tell me a little bit about the pastor, I believe it was, who came to help you.
Well, the person that I was dating at the time, who I'm engaged to now, Jason, he was a pastor for several years. Mm-hmm. And he was able to recognize what was happening when it was happening. He knew what he was dealing with. He never screamed out, "Oh my gosh, it's a demon," or anything like that, or "You're possessed." He never did that. But he knew what he was dealing with. The only problem was that it was on such a personal level with him, because it was me, that it was extremely difficult to push forward. It was hard on us both. And there, although he could identify what it was and what was happening, we didn't know that it was permanent. The first attack, we thought, okay, this is attached to this house, because that's usually what you go with. And, you know, as far as investigating goes, rarely is it that something is attached to the person. It's usually the property or a house, or, you know, it's something to that nature. So, you know, we were hoping that this thing was attached to that house, and we just made a pact never to go back to that house again. After that, and it was very, you know, I was really exhausted after that. I was tired. It takes a while to recover from these things. They completely drain you, and that's what they're there to do. They're there to just suck everything out of you, and they do that. So it took me the first time a couple of days to really recover, and I was very weak and you know, sort of in a daze almost. I walked around in a sort of dazed state. So it was part of it, I think, just accepting what had happened. But we honestly thought, and even though he had pastored for a while and he had never had, you know, been to an exorcism, he had seen one possessed person before, but, you know, we never thought that it was something that was attached to me. At that point, we just thought it was something that had to do with that house. So problem solved, never go back to the house. And that's what we chose to do at that point.
You know, self-preservation got to come in at some point. I think you made the right call. And I think all my listeners out there right now are agreeing as well, Cindy. Definitely the right call there.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. And, you know, like, it makes sense. I mean, there's people out there who might be listening to podcasts now who, you know, maybe they're running with the wrong crowd and who are into drugs and stuff. You know, the best way to get away from the drugs and stuff is to get away from the crowd. It makes complete sense. Maybe it was time for you to take a step back from paranormal investigating. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think you made the right call. That's for sure. Tell me a little bit more about, you know, what you've actually seen with your own two eyes, though. Like, you know, you tell me that you kind of take a back seat, but this thing is still controlling you. Tell me a little tiny bit, maybe some of the entities, anything you've seen. You mentioned a shadow person. Have you seen anything else, like visual?
Visually, yes, we have seen a shadow person. That's what primarily we have seen, and I have seen, is a big hulking shadow. The night that I actually had the first attack, the thing that came at me appeared as a big, it was a giant vapor. It was energy. It was this big, and I don't mean giant as in like 10 feet tall. I mean like 30 or 40 feet tall. And it came through these trees so hard that it literally shook, almost twisted this tree out of its way to get to me. And that, you know, it's appeared that way. It's appeared as sometimes blue light, like a big blue orb. We see blue flashes. In my head is a different story. When I hear it in my head as well. And it's not like a voice talking to you in your head. It's something different. But it is, it's almost like it's behind me and it's talking to me. I don't hear it audibly, but I do hear it with my senses, I suppose, is the best way I can put it. And it sometimes it's extremely loud. So I also see, but I don't see in detail. But I do see it. But it does appear, it appears differently. Sometimes it has appeared as a child. And I know that people can probably identify with that. But that would also lead me into telling people to take extra caution when you're messing with a child's spirit. And a lot of people, I'm sure, have. And that's where you have to be extremely careful. Because they love to appear as children. They absolutely love it. That is their favorite thing to do, because then they can gain your trust, they can gain your sympathy, and it's a lot easier. You're a lot more pliable when you're in that kind of state. So it's the children spirits that you really, those are the ones you're not going to expect, you know, and it's very cliche sounding, but it's absolutely true. But we've seen it that way. I've seen it that way. I saw when I was younger, much younger, a teenager, I saw it as, or something as a man in a hat and a cloak, or not a man, but a thing in a you know, wide brim hat and a coat.
The hat man. Uh-oh.
Yeah. With no shoulder, no neck, you know, just shoulders and, like a cloak and a hat. It was through a window. So I have seen it that way too. My daughter, who was also on the show, most people don't know, but I do have more than one daughter, mm-hmm. but I chose to keep the younger children and my oldest daughter out of the show itself, because, you know, just to be protective. So my daughter that was on the show, that, you know, was portrayed on the show, she saw actually this, she saw it in the form that it wanted her to see it in, which was not very, it was horrifying. Almost, I guess, I'm trying to think, almost, scaly, serpent-like.
Mm-hmm.
And with horns and really long claws. And then the movements are very jerky. The movements don't make sense. They're not like our movements where, you know, in this dimension or world, we're fluid, we move, you know, they don't move the same way that we do as when we see them. It's very, very strange and very jerky and clicky is the best way I can explain it. Kind of a shuffle and sometimes not even on the floor. And their movements are too fast for the movement that they are. They look like they should be moving faster than what they're moving, if that makes any sense. I know it's very strange,
mm-hmm.
but that it appeared to her that way a few times. So very, very tall. We also, as far as seeing things, we have a picture. The paranormal group that came and helped me, they gave me evidence and they got one picture after I had left that night. And we have a picture of this thing staring into the camera lens. It's not something I share. I will say that up front. I'm not keen on putting it out there
mm-hmm.
for people to see because I've had some people look at it and have adverse reactions to it and be really freaked out by it and upset. And I'm not gonna unleash that. You know what I mean? I'm not comfortable with that, as well as not comfortable with saying the name. I get asked that a lot. If I got, you know, people message me asking me if I know if the demon gave its name, and I don't. That's something that I'm not comfortable telling people either. So I definitely don't do that. I'm under the belief that giving the name can actually, you know, it does give over some power. I feel like if you have that name, you know as well as I do that people are going to go and do rituals or whatever it is that they have the gumption to do and go and try to call these things up. And I don't want that sort of, you know, responsibility on me. So I definitely don't do that either.
It makes total sense. I mean, it's kind of like, oh my God, did you see that banned episode of this TV show? And then everyone's like, no, we have to see it now. Do you know what I mean? It's the same. same mentality. I get what you mean. And you know what? There's been a few EVPs that I've caught over the years and stuff like that that are just so. The word I'm looking for is just, I can't even, like, there's just no way that this is just radio noise. They're very, very, very personal to me, like, from past family members and stuff like that. Yeah. There's even stuff that I have that I won't let any other people hear, because I know it's just for me.
Yes.
And that's okay. Yeah. That's okay. It's all right to have your own little private collection of anything strange and odd, especially that. I will say this, though. I'm kind of glad you're not showing me the picture because I think I'd freak right out if I seen that. That's pretty freaky. There's no doubt.
It still freaks me out. It's very, I just will say that of the people that I've had look at it, which are a few, they have said this is the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Hmm.
It's that obvious. It's that in your face and that right there. And it was taken with a full spectrum camera. So it's in complete darkness that this picture was taken.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not something that everyone should see. I mean, I don't know that someone would look at it and like freak out and, you know, commit murder or something. You just don't know. It's not something to play with. So
I agree. You know. We don't want another catcher in a rye on our hands. You just keep that one to yourself. No. You keep that one to yourself. Tell me a little tiny bit about the experience of having an actor portray you. That must have been a very, very different type of experience. Because I know that, you know, on that show, A Haunting, season 5, when they actually did, you know, the possession of Cindy Sauer, they had an actress stand in and play you, correct?
Yes, they do. They have actors come in and play, the people that they're telling the story about. And it was interesting. You do go in and do interviews. They call you in, and you don't actually meet the actors or actresses. They do this, separately. Mm-hmm. So the filming for, like, the on-site filming for what they're doing is one thing. And then they have B-roll, which they went to, actually, to Social Circle to film the B-roll. But the house that they filmed was, of course, not the house that I lived in. And the area that they used in most of the filming with the actors was not in Georgia. So they do that closer to where they're producing. But they came down to Atlanta, and we did interviews. Each individual person on the show sat through, several hours, depending on, what their content was, of interviews. I myself had to sit through 8 hours of interview, mm-hmm. Over a two-day span. So that experience was very interesting. We had actually had activity happen while they were interviewing me.
Oh, now you got to tell me what happened there, Cindy. That's awesome. What happened? So they're rolling their film. They got their film rolling there, and their microphones, their big expensive, like, thousands and thousands of dollar microphones, like, way better than anything I own, by the way. And they're filming you, and what happens?
Okay. First thing that happened was the lights. Their lights kept the bulbs, and these bulbs last forever.
Yep.
The bulbs kept blowing. They kept sparking and going out. They replaced two bulbs, and they haven't had to replace those in years. So that's one thing. And then another was, and this is a big hot warehouse with a big, big metal roof. It kept running on the roof, just do back and forth. That we could hear it. It was trying to distract it any way it could. And I kept seeing it pass through. We were in this curtain area that had set up these partitions. And where you'd walk through the partition, I kept seeing this shadow darting back and forth. And it kept telling me it was there. And I'm like, it's here, it's here. And they kept hearing things and asking Jason, now what does this happen? What's going on? He's like, no, this is normal. It was banging on walls and being annoying, causing a ruckus. There was one point where we had to break because things were just getting intense. So we took a break. The tech guy, he was sitting there, and this thing told me it did not like him. And I looked at him and I said, it doesn't like you. And he looked at me and said, oh, really? I said, yeah. It does not like you at all. And he said, I wonder why. And I said, because you have something on you. And he said, no, I don't. I said, yes, you do. I said, you have something on you and it does not like it. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, yeah, you do. He had something in his pocket and I'm not sure what it was, but it was a pocket. It was something, a religious relic of some sort in his pocket. And he had a tattoo. Mm-hmm. That it did not like. And he was just, he'd never said anything to me, but he got really nervous and walked off after that. So,
yeah. And he kind of saw through what he might have brought something to protect himself with. I'm thinking that's.
And I'm sure he did.
That's probably what it was. In a way, he was being proactive.
He was. Well, they said that after, since they started with Destination America, that they have weird things happen. But the huge thing that happened that day was. On the second day, we were finishing up our interview, but it was running over. And the priest who did the exorcism was scheduled to come in after me. But we did not want them to overlap because things weren't good at that time. So he did arrive outside. Nobody said anything. You couldn't tell. There's no way that anyone would know anyone pulled up. But he did arrive before we left. And when he did, we were going through an interview. They were filming. And I suffered a massive attack film.
Oh.
So wow. It just came around and it pounced. And I did get... There was a display right there for them to see while they were recording. Wow. So that was, yeah, that was pretty intense. They did dump the footage. They did not use it. They were extremely respectful. They're good people. So they were very understanding, and it was just an experience. So, yeah, it was interesting, though. It was very interesting. We didn't get to find out who played us or what the actors would look like or what the whole story was, because they were going from our interview. So we had to wait until, and this was in August, we had to wait till December to actually watch the actual episode on television.
That must have been really exciting.
It was exciting, and it was nerve-wracking because I didn't know how they were going to portray the entire thing. And of course, you're coming out to the world, you know, you're going public with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so also, I had had an exorcism right before the broadcast of the show. I'd had my second exorcism, so we were coming off that as well. So it was pretty interesting waiting for this to happen. It was surreal.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are many things to be said about the rite of exorcism, and there's many different versions of exorcism as well. What exactly did that entail for you?
For me, the priest is an Orthodox priest.
Mm-hmm.
So, and not Catholic, but, you know, close to it. It's branched from the same, you know, from the same kind of precept. It's a little bit different, but not very much different. It is solemn, is what they call a full exorcism, which is, you know, it's kind of all the bells and whistles. It's what you'd expect. It's almost like what you see on television as far as the rite itself goes, and what is said and the prayers that are said and the procedures. For me, it was, there are gaps in it. I will say that there's some things that and of course, you know, it's not from my perspective. So the perspective of everyone else around me, they were seeing things happen that I did not know about because I was, you know, in the place that I was in. I know that when Father Darren arrived, or Benedict Simpson is what he's called, when he arrived, it was bad before he even got there. And I had tried to do some things to myself before he came in the door. But when he did come in the door, everything was already at a fever pitch. I had lost control. I was very upset and angry. I had to be restrained. And, you know, my thoughts were not my own. I can say that much. And that I was eventually kind of placed in a chair, and he started the rite of solemn exorcism, which is essentially praying so that the demon come to the surface and trying to expel the demon after getting its name, and then offering communion, and just there are different things they do, you know, to see if the demon's gone. And the rite had to be repeated, I think twice. I don't know more if it was more than that, but it did have to be repeated, and it was a long process. You know, they say it can last for days. It was over an hour. I'm not sure exactly how much, but it was a constant fight for over an hour, which is very tiring. It's very demanding physically, and your body really goes through a lot. I was tired before it started. I was tired, you know, in the very beginning. I remember my body being exhausted, but it didn't stop. It just kept going. And the further it went, the more kind of contorted I got, and the more angry I became, and the more my body lashed out. So, you know, I was beaten up and bruised when it was over. I had bite marks on me, and they were, you know, from my body, like my teeth. And, you know, bruises. I was really sore. It took a while to kind of recuperate after this. It was very taxing on my body.
I understand. Well, That is just, wow. A crazy journey, absolutely no doubt. And, you know, I'd like to hope that at the end of all this, there's got to be some happiness. There's got to be a happy ending of some sort. But you say you still are afflicted. Is this true?
We still have things go on. We do. We're you know, we live in Savannah now. We've got a new one. He's not new anymore, but he's 3. And he's awesome. You know, the family is great. We're doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
We still do have things happen. We still have issues. And, you know, we're positive though. This doesn't define me, and it doesn't, it doesn't run my life. It used to be something that was extremely exhausting and it just consumed everything, consumed my thoughts, but it doesn't. I'm very strong in my faith. I know that God has a plan. There are reasons, and it may be that, you know, I fight, and that's what I'm supposed to do, but I know that I'm supposed to help other people. And that's what the important thing is. If I have to go through trials in order to help other people, then I do. And, but we are extremely positive about it. I have not lost faith through all of this. That is the answer. That's just the answer. You know, God is the only answer through all this. I've had so many people tell me so many things, and it always comes back to my faith. And it's not something that someone is going to be able to do for me. You know, exorcisms, they do work, but a lot of times it's like a sickness. You know, you can get the sickness gone and it's gone, but if you're not careful, it can come back. And so I, you know, on some level there's weakness that has to happen. And I've had people say, you know, stay strong. You just have to stay strong. But there's not one single human being on this earth that can be strong forever, every day and every minute and every second of every day, because we are human and we fail. And so for someone to be expected to just, you know, put on your armor and stay tough forever is that's something that's not realistic. So you can't blame a person and say, well, you were possessed because you did this or you did that. Short of someone summoning a demon and saying, I want to be possessed. You know, people tend to blame it, the person. They tend to lay blame, well, there must have been something you did, or you must have not lived right. You must have, but if that were the case, then everyone that did these things or did not do these things would be possessed. So, you know, it's something that I'm able to have this perspective and use to kind of open people's eyes and educate people on this. And possibly help people. We have things happen, but we don't react the same way. We don't think the same way about it. We're very strong in our faith, and that is extremely important. And there is a happy ending. I'd like to think at some point that there's an extremely happy ending and this is going to be over. But in the meantime, we're using this to be able to put a face on this and say, you know, this needs to be documented. It could help people. It could be, you know, if I have to be patient zero, then so be it.
Cindy, I can't think of a better place to plug your book than right now, because it is literally the testament to everything you've been through. Please tell the people where they can find your book, the title and where it's from, where you can get it.
Okay. It is in the process of being completed. And we're submitting manuscripts at this point, so we can't get it yet. Mm-hmm. But if you go on Facebook to my Facebook page, it is The Possession of Cindy Sauer, S-A-U-E-R. And you can find not only a snippet or two of the book, so there are samples there. You are going to be able to find information on my case, and you'll be able to see updates. And if you drop an email in the message box, then I will personally start emailing and updating you on the process of the book. It's going to be available online when it's done. It will hopefully be available in bookstores as well. And also, it's going to be available for Kindle, you know, on Amazon. Any outlet we can get it to, it's going to be there. But that is the title. That's what we're going with. So just keep an eye on it. This is not a book that is based on a true story. These are the actual events. To the best of my memory and recollection, and the things that I'm writing are 100% true. These things did happen. They're not, there's no fluff. They weren't elaborated. This is how it happened. And that's what's so different about this book and about this case, is that it's the person who went through it who is conveying what happened to them. And it's not someone telling it for me or embellishing it. This is it. This is the story.
All right, folks, there you have it. Like I said at the top of the interview, one of the greatest tricks the devil and his demons ever played on us all is convincing the world that they do not exist. But Cindy Sauer says otherwise. Check out her book, guys. Check out her on Facebook. Cindy, thanks so very, very much for being my guest on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.